Hello, friends. It's me, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, known as the number one podcast that beekeepers listen to as they're tending their nests. Very excited about that award, and I want to give a big thanks to the Unified Podcast Award Division over at Calamart Brothers and Company. Also, a big thank you to Vasilia Drews, the Queen of the Bees.
May your nest produce much larva this year.
In Buddhism, they say that your life can change in the amount of time it takes for a horse to swish its tail. This is a part of life we don't like to accept. For those of you driving in your cars right now listening, just look at the cars around you. Any one of them could be driven by somebody who's been snorting crystal meth for the last 5 days and has their grandmother's semi-lifeless corpse bound and gagged in the trunk of their car as they deliver her to some icy lake they plan on pushing her into. What's stopping the demon that caused them to do such evil from whispering into their ear and telling them to swerve their car into your car? It can happen at any second. I don't need to tell you this. You hear this every time you open that hell window that we call news. People die unexpectedly all the time. Listen to this. That's Taylor Mitchell, a Canadian folk singer who went out on a hike and was eaten by coyotes. She didn't know that was going to happen when she wrote that song. It wasn't like she knew that that would happen, but that's how quickly life can change. You're out on a nature hike and suddenly you're in the digestive tract of coyotes. Bee attacks, lightning strikes, tornadoes, brain aneurysms. The list goes on and on and on. These are the wolves that gallop around the human herd and from time to time drag one of us into oblivion. It's just the way things are. And you forget about it. And that's okay. You're not supposed to be walking around with your hands on your ears, silently screaming all the time. But we are encouraged to ignore that fact by most of the world. You're not reminded of this. There's no classes in high school, and there probably should be a class in high school called You're Gonna Die class, where everyone sits down and the teacher explains to the class that everyone that they know is going to die and that they're going to die. And so it's really important that while you're wandering around this gravity well we call planet Earth, not to waste your time hating other people, trying to get revenge on other people, or the worst crime of all, ignoring people you love because you want to punish them by withdrawing your presence from their life. That is an evil thing to do. In moments of brushes with mortality, they wake people up. This is why after earthquakes and tornadoes and natural disasters, when the people come wandering out of their homes, they're communicative, they help each other, and they suddenly it's as though they don't ignore each other anymore, which is what we all do. So that's a preamble. Here's what happened. My ex-girlfriend, Fred, my sweet, darling friend, I got to come up with a better term than ex-girlfriend. I've talked about her a bunch on this podcast. She ended up spending the night at my house, and she wasn't feeling very well. And then the next day, we went to the doctor's office, and the doctor came out and said, you have to take her to the emergency room because she's very sick. And then suddenly, I'm driving to the Glendale Memorial Hospital, which, unless you're a demon that likes to lap up the fear urine sprayed out of the cocks of dying gangsters, then probably the Glendale Memorial Hospital emergency room is not a place you want to hang out. Emergency rooms are, I imagine, all pretty terrible, and they show how even though Western medicine seems to understand the way the human organism works down to the molecular level, they've somehow overlooked the fact that there is an aesthetic sense that human beings have and that their surroundings actually impact the way they feel. I don't know why emergency rooms, which are essentially chambers of healing, have to look like the basement of a Halloween haunted house. And these people are freaking out. You don't need to make them feel like they're extras in Jacob's Ladder. Let's get some Tibetan salt crystals in these places. Baskets of antiseptic puppies that you can pet. People in white robes who look like they can channel the spirits of Atlantean healing gods. Anything would be better than numb, blank-faced doctors wandering around in a hurry trying to decide if they should tend for the gangster who just got his hand blown off by an illegal firecracker, or your girlfriend who's writhing in pain on her hospital bed because she has a fever that's about to approach the point where her brain turns into mashed potatoes. She's laying on her hospital bed. She turned to me. She's shaking with that kind of almost seizure-like tremor that overcomes people who have a very high fever. Also, her pupils had become pinpricks, and she was still writhing in pain even though they'd injected her with morphine. She turned and looked at me and said, "I'm scared." And that was the sledgehammer that obliterated all of the games that I'd been playing and allowed me to clearly see how much I cared for her and how much I wanted her in my life and how devastated I would be if she wasn't there anymore. So I'm a dummy, and that's what it takes for dummies to understand that it's important to not take people for granted. It takes a trip to the emergency room. Smart people, they just innately understand that they can't have the luxury of cutting people out of their lives because they're scared of being vulnerable. They already know that. They learn that. But I guess it takes like extreme sledgehammer blows from the universe for me to break out of whatever hypnotic convenient trance I've allowed myself to get into. And if you're treating people like crap, more than likely you are in a trance where you're allowing yourself the delusion of permanence and you think you're somehow immortal. The delusion of permanence is the mother of cunts. If you think your parents or your friends or your house or you are going to be around forever, then it creates the luxury of being a dick. But that's not the way things are at all. And once you realize that, it definitely gives you pause when you're wanting to scream at a Time Warner operator. About a 3-millisecond pause, and then you scream at them anyway. We've got a great podcast today. I'm sorry if I was being diddactic in the intro there. I've been in a hospital. I've been listening to Jack Kornfield and eating medical marijuana. That's where my brain is right now. So that's what I'm going to talk about. I'm sorry. Great podcast, Emil Amos, my favorite conversation that I ever had with him. First, some business. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Squarespace is an amazing website that allows you to create aesthetically pleasing, professional-looking websites without having to go mucking through the sulfuric swamp that is Craigslist. If you've listened to my podcast long enough, you know that once I did an interview with a woman who sold her socks online. She made money selling her socks. Think about that the next time you find yourself throwing your socks into the washing machine. Consider that you're throwing gold into the ocean. Don't throw gold into the ocean. They've got everything that you need to create a professional-level website, including a shopping cart, the ability to have your own podcast, anything that you need to get your ideas into the digital ocean that is the internet. Sell those socks. Are you going to really let those clumps of your grandmother's pubic hair go into the trash can? Those are little nuggets of gold, and you can start a website selling them at Squarespace for only $8 a month. If you put in the code Duncan1, you will get 10% off your website, and if you sign up for a year, they give you a free domain name. So you could even get my grandmother's tufts of pubic hair for sale.com. That's going to be included in your membership to Squarespace.com. They also have a 15-day trial membership so you can see if the website works for you. And they've got 24/7 customer service, which I tested out, and it's quite good. So sign up for Squarespace, support this podcast, and get your ideas out there into the world. We're also brought to you by Amazon.com. There is no longer a need to go outside. If you live in New York and LA, Amazon actually has this new service called Amazon Fresh where they deliver groceries to you. So that's it. That's it. We can finally retreat into the safety of our man-made caves without having to cross paths with stinky, feverish, tuberculosis-ridden, murderous, insane humans. I don't really hate the outside world that much, but let's face it, going to Target is basically like going to a diarrhea carnival. You don't want to go there. You can order all of that stuff just by going to Amazon.com, and if you go through the Amazon portal located at DuncanTrussell.com, we get a very small percentage of whatever you buy on Amazon. So it's a way for you to support this podcast and while avoiding slipping on gravy vomit that exploded out of a child with some undiagnosed brand new flu at the Target or wherever you want to go. These brick and mortar stores, man, they're the hallways of Satan. Amazon.com will fix that for you. You can get food, record players, you name it. It's all there. Amazon.com. And finally, as always, we're sponsored by the sweetest little t-shirt company in Thailand, Shure Design T-Shirts. Shure Design T-Shirts manufacture some of the softest t-shirts known to man. These t-shirts are softer than the... Now, I don't know if you guys have ever been so fortunate as to find yourself in the forest and to have a feral cat hump your mouth, but this happened to me once. I was taking a nap in the forest when I was younger, and this big, fat, feral cat climbed out of a tree, climbed onto my face, and before I could stop it, it humped my face, and it blasted feral cat jizz all over my face and ran into the woods. I'll never forget how soft what came out of that cat was. I felt as though I was stroking the wings of an angel as I wiped the semen away from my cheeks and rubbed it into my pants. The folks over at Shure Design T-Shirts figured this out a long time ago. This is apparently popular knowledge. This is information that lots of early settlers in America knew. They knew that if you found a feral cat and made it come in your face, that it could calm you down in a lightning storm. And Shure Design T-Shirts, they mastered the art of extracting semen from the wild cats of Thailand in a way that's humane and pleasurable for both the extractor and the extractee. And they transform that semen into the very, very, very soft fabric that every single Shure Design T-Shirt is made of. I've seen videos of this process happening. It's a beautiful service to the cats of Thailand, and it also is a beautiful service to lonely cat lovers who live in Thailand. And it's a beautiful service to the world because it creates shirts that are so damn soft, you're going to want to fly into heaven and punch Jesus for not telling you about these shirts sooner. Go to shuredesignt-shirts.com. If you put my name in, Duncan, you will get 10%. Off of these shirts. We're also sponsored by Audible. You can go to audibletrial.com/familyhour. Sign up for a trial membership. They give us $15. And I have been using Audible to listen to endless Jack Kornfield lectures, which I'm pretty obsessed with right now. Finally, if you want to go really crazy, you can donate to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour by going to duncantrussell.com. We also have a shop with all kinds of posters and t-shirts that you could buy. We're out of a lot of shirts right now, but more are on the way. Actually, by whenever you're listening to this, who knows if we're out of shirts. Go check DuncanTrussell.com. Go to the shop. And finally, sign up for our forum. Join the plethora of bizarre conversations that are happening there right now. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Now, please welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, my dearest friend in the world, the great musician who started the band Holy Sons. He's also in the band Ohm. He's also in the band Grails. He's also in the band Lilacs and Champagne, and has just released a limited edition vinyl album with a song that he and I recorded on Chrome Peeler Records. There'll be links at DuncanTrussell.com. So please welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, the beautiful Emil Amos. We are here again, at last, with a magnificent man, God's own sweet soldier, the eternal loner, alchemist of music, my dear friend Emil Amos.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Excellent. That cheered me up.
Good, man. Are you feeling down?
No. I've been for like a few fucking months. I've been feeling like totally just fucking vague. Not one way or the other. It's kind of driving me crazy.
That's
honestly
brutal.
It is very weird.
Can you describe that feeling a little bit more? Being vague.
I sure can. This is what I was trying. I did a podcast the other day that was all about music. It hasn't come out yet, but I tried to get into this for a second, and it completely like fell flat. But I know I can do it correctly with you. Although I don't know, I have a suspicion you're gonna say you feel like you're in a different phase of life, but I'm interested to see what.
Let's hear it.
What you say? Well, I feel like this is what I feel like. I feel like, you know, life in some very cliche representation of it is like this roller coaster ride, you know, where a lot of the first half of life is sort of all this is filled with anticipation and fear and unsureness and insecurity, a lot of you know, you're going up the roller coaster and you're constantly thinking about, at least in my metaphor, you're constantly thinking about what's gonna happen, what's gonna happen to me, where am I gonna end up, and am I gonna accomplish all the things that I can perceive are within my potentiality and yes, all the ambitions I've set for myself. And so you're going up the roller coaster of life for years, and you know, you're terrified of so much shit, of what other people may think of you, of what kind of horrible things you may do to yourself, to other people. I mean, you're just speculating on all, yes, the shit. And then at some point around this time of life, kind of this sort of halfway through, or like you're actually an adult at this point, and yes, and you're at the top of the roller coaster, and you started to accomplish all the things that you dreamed of, and you started to enact all the things that you wondered if you would, and you start going down the roller coaster, and you get sort of a rush, I suppose, of satisfaction of like, it's really happening. Everything, you know, there is a justice to life. There's a destiny to life, and you're enjoying the things that you have always anticipated enjoying. It could be, you know, it could be all anything, you know, but you start going down the roller coaster, and basically you see the other side of life, the side that you've been wondering what it looked like, and you're going down and you look out at it, and now you kind of have the whole map to what's behind the curtain, all the cogs of the way the world works. And eventually you just sort of sigh, you know, even while you're still going down and you're supposed to be experiencing this rush of excitement, you just sort of think to yourself, well, that's it. Like, I kind of understand it now, and I kind of know what the rest of it's going to be like, and I can see clearly in front of me how it all plays out. And there's a kind of post-coital kind of depression that comes with it because the mystery is sort of gone to some degree, and the fear and all the anticipation is not there because you're sort of secure with it, and you see the layout, you know, in front of you. It's a very strange feeling. There's definitely
can you describe this layout? How would you describe the layout of things? What is this thing?
Well, that life, you kind of know how it's going to go now. Like, you know, whether or not your boss fires you or your girlfriend dumps you, or this is a state of mind. So you're going to have to try to relate to that state of mind if you ever feel like this, or, you know, no matter what happens, you just sort of like shrug at it all. You sort of understand the relativism and the absurdity of it all. You're like, oh yeah, you're leaving me. But you know, I can see how that makes sense from your perspective. And I don't agree with you, but I also don't really care to change your mind. And I don't, you know what I mean? Like things, as the world engages with you, everything seems kind of, you know, like I always felt God was kind of shrugging at me, like, so what? You know, but now then you feel like you're shrugging back at God, and you're just sort of like this is it, you know?
Like you and God just walked out of the like a Lord of the Rings movie. You're just like kind of what I expected.
Exactly. So I don't know if that. I mean, there's elements of satisfaction to it, elements of depression to it. It's just sort of like life. It's sort of like getting older, and it's sort of like getting this God's eye view on things. That it's satisfying, but it's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of sad. But so anyway, with that being said, I tried to kind of illustrate it. Do you ever feel like that as you get older, or do you still feel very embedded down in the trenches and like at war so much with your continuing ambitions and your fears that you don't feel so sort of resigned?
I do hear what you're talking about, and I can relate to moments of that. But I have found that it's definitely the ambition. Like I've gotten to the point in life now where I understand that hope is a terrible thing to have, and that ambition is greed with perfume on it. So I kind of have seen those things and when I see somebody kind of fervently attacking some goal, there is this sense of like watching a dog run after a ball or something. And you see the same kind of passion in the dog that you see in someone trying to get a recording career going. And you see that same kind of passion in a dog that you see with someone who's like trying to become a famous actor quite often, that same kind of diligent, sort of completely focused, motivated goal. But we create this hierarchy of what matters and what doesn't matter. So when the dog goes running for the ball with this passion, with the passion of a professional dancer auditioning or about to book, like when it's down to some professional dancer and two other dancers to get some great part, it's that same level of focus as in that dog. But because it's a dancer, or it's because it's an artist, or it's a businessman who's like finally about to get the big deal, we somehow see, when we witness that look on their face of diligent confidence and of a lifetime's worth of focus reaching some goal, you see the same look on the hawk descending to grab a mouse or something. You know, you see the same look in all forms of life. But humans like to think that look is somehow, our look means something, you know, or our sort of trying to become a famous actor, a great doctor, businessman, or whatever our thing is. We like to think that that's more than running after a tennis ball. But when you start understanding the pure impermanent qualities of the universe, in the fact that you're essentially just a cloud of atoms that will eventually be aerosolized by time, then you do, it does cause you to go into another place where you're, it's more difficult to play what people would consider the traditional role of a human in society. But all that being said, I get excitement from those epiphanies. It doesn't feel, to me, that feels like leveling up, like getting to this next place. And it makes me think, oh my God, I bet this kind of experience of waking up to seeing that many people are hypnotized and I think I'm waking up, I think that that keeps happening. I don't think it stops just at this age or this level. I think that if you keep bringing your awareness to the present moment, find some kind of meditative practice, continue to respectfully use psychedelics, then the fractal that we're existing within always surprises us every time the thing that once seemed solid and consistent and continuous transforms into a brand new thing that we couldn't even imagine, as though God were playing this series of peekaboos with you, you know, like you see the hands of God in the form of your girlfriend or your job or whatever, and then suddenly your girlfriend's gone, you've lost your job, you're sick, the hands pull away, and now you're in this entirely new universe, you know. And then I think that those hands pull away when you have that final exhalation, you know, and you die. And I think it's this, and I think even after that moment, this is maybe where you and me disagree, though, that's the same thing just continues with an accelerated rapidity of the opening and closing of the sort of eyelids of eternity that are always forming as you. And it's eventually, finally, it just, maybe, I don't know, that's when you get the great wake up and you realize, oh, fuck, I was just playing a futuristic video game in some Tokyo fucking video arcade in 2080 or something. You know, who knows what it turns into, but
I agree with you. You feel, when you're 11, you feel infinitely old and you think you're going to do yourself in, you have a bad summer or something, you know, like you feel 99 years old. It, like that, it happens over and over. Maybe it means you need to change your scenery. Maybe there's something in your day-to-day life that it's asking you to kind of like analyze and change. So maybe you need a change. I think you're right. You just cycle back and you'll go through the whole process again.
Yeah, and it's in the process that the process maybe is always the same, or the series of the way the thing runs is always the same, but I think that it is refining itself. It's kind of like a centrifuge or something, and you happen to be the thing inside the centrifuge, and with each subsequent cycle of the thing, you know, whatever the cycle is that you're going through, you find yourself becoming more and more refined, and that refinement, you know, is the process that time seems to have on the soul or the heart. And that's if you open up to it. If you resist, then the refinement, we see the bitter, angry person who is that's just somebody who's been at war with what is, to the point where they're just beaten to shreds, and that anger and the bitterness is just a person in the last stages of a fight with something that they can never, ever win. But eventually you're always like, oh, fuck, I'm not going to win this one. There's no way that I'm going to win a war against time. I'm not. How do you win that? You know? So once you realize that, you drop that fucking, you drop that, the resistance, and then all of a sudden this incredible relaxation comes into your life.
It's true. We were talking the other day about an interesting subject now that I look back on it, but you were talking about how when you read your journals from when you're 16, you know, you go through waves of of being horrified that you're saying the same things, battling with the same neuroses as you do now. That's a pretty fascinating thing. But in a way, I feel like right now you're arguing, so what? You know, so you're also refining your viewpoint on this kind of catch-22 that you might be caught in the whole time too. It's not like you're like literally still 16 years old. And sometimes when you read those journal entries, you know, I mean, some of those things are deceptive, but sometimes, you know, I was in that conversation, I was asking myself the same thing about my early tapes and driving around and listening to, say, a show I played in a bar in 1995, and I was just seriously nauseated. Like, I wanted to throw up. It was so... Yeah. Like, we were talking about how you hear the tone of just total self-satisfaction in the young version of yourself, and it's really repulsive, and or whatever, self-immersion and just obsession. But anyway, you know, maybe that's what you're supposed to take away from those experiences of seeing how unrefined you were, is that this is a funny thing in music is like, when I was growing up in the 90s trying to record myself, like, one of my main objectives was to capture a fleeting emotion as it really is, like, as it really sounds, not necessarily like just an emotion, but just a behavior, a thing about human life that is raw and not processed, and something that might be embarrassing or you know, not complimentary to me or anything, but is sort of eternal and is exposing, like, it's really exposing this piece of human life. And so with that mission in mind, I had to be going through, as a rule to some degree, I had to be going through that thing on tape. I had to be so radically honest that I was going through this thing at the same time. And this is the irony, is that as time went on, I started to realize that in reflection, when other people listened to that, for some reason, it wasn't really communicating exactly necessarily what I really wanted it to communicate. Because dealing – and this could be the philosophical – argument, depending on who's talking about it, but depending on what emotion I was going through, they were having to confront the weird elements of the way it sounded so intense and so strange that they weren't even getting the point. So over the years, I started to learn that if I just simply emoted what I wanted to say, which might have been more philosophical, if I just simply said something without necessarily going through it at the time, like a much calmer kind of dissertation on it, it would actually end up communicating a lot better. And my point is that as you learn not to try, you know, as you learn not to try so fucking hard, you tend to achieve a certain kind of grace that you are always looking for. You know, that early on in life, you just try to go for the jugular so viciously that you end up creating so much chaos and drama around a lot of your interactions that you're never getting down to the point with people. And slowly, I think, in agreement with you, as you sort of like age, you get to this state of grace where you're at peace with things and you can kind of calmly emote yourself and explain yourself, and sort of it doesn't have to be so charged, and you don't have to twist the knife so much, you know.
Yes. Yeah, man. And it's such a god, like, ending that battle is such a relief, man. And that's, you know, it's interesting what you're talking about there. I it's like, if your main goal was, I guess, communicating to people with your music, then if you to make it so that people couldn't understand what you were saying in as pure a way as you would like would be maybe a form of indulgence or something for you. So, like, I could see how there'd be a kind of letting go in refining your music in a way that it's that people can understand that thing that you were trying to capture in this raw form. And that is it. That's exactly right. That's it. Anytime you find a place where you can do that, it will always get better. You know, it's like you find a place where you can do that. You find a place where it's like, you know, so many comedians, they feel like they've constantly got to be doing stand-up comedy. And every night. And you do, when you're like working on stuff, you do need to do that. But sometimes I wonder if they're really enjoying it. And I think that there's something that I've learned in with stand-up comedy in particular. I've been writing new jokes and they're finally coming again, but that came through a process of like letting go of a lot of other stuff, including stand-up comedy. You know what I mean? I just had to start letting go of the clutch, the ambitious like claw in the neck of life where you're just like, give it to me, I'll make you give it to me. That fucking thing, you just like, you let go. You let go and you think, no, this is perfect where I'm at right now. Just play around with that. This is perfect inside the imperfection, you know, like the relationship that's weird, the creative block. It's that moment that, and you can't keep that moment going or because you'll always end up resisting again, but it's that moment where like, instead of wishing things were a different way, hoping for a different result, denying what you're thinking or feeling, you just let the entire surge of experience come pouring into you, minus any of the resistance. And God damn, that feels good. That is a rush, man. That's like you are sticking your soul in the waterfall of time and just feeling it rush through you. All of it, not trying to change yourself at all. And then when you get into those points, if you can maintain it, which I certainly can't, but if you get into those points for quick, fleeting glimpses, you'll realize that your mind is so much faster than your attention. And then you realize, like, Jesus, God, my mind is processing stuff at such an incredible rate that I'm only picking up this one tiny, tiny little piece of it, which I consider to be my life. And then when you catch peaks of that, you realize like, oh fuck, this gets so much more intense. Human life, human society, does it continue to like draw me in as much? Absolutely not. But human life is just, one tiny little piece of this thing that we're a part of. It's those moments when you grasp it, man. That's very exciting. Those are and you absolutely only get that way through letting go. It's so weird. It's like the only game I can think of that is won by losing.
Every time you step on stage, if you're doing comedy, or every time you hit record on a 4-track and you have the mic sitting in the same stand in the same room, you notice early on, I guess if you're paying attention, that nothing ever sounds the same. You never know why. No one's ever known why. I've worked with extremely experienced engineers, and everybody sort of admits, if they're honest and paying attention, that at some point you are not in control, you know, and you can set that same mic up in the same room every day, and for some reason, you know, it could be nobody knows. It could be the weather, you know, the molecules in the room, but it sounds different. It just does. And so you can go one of two ways. It seems like most people, you know, with professionalism in mind, go off in the direction of trying to control everything, yeah, trying to reduce, you know, the random factors, and trying to focus so much on the equipment they use and getting the best shit. And I originally like immediately recognized it's a certain type of faith too, you know, especially like when you're taking acid and stuff, you start to, you could go one of two ways. You can go with it, you know, or you can try to fight against it. And as I immediately recognized that I would never be in control of this process, I just thought, you know, naturally I would use it to my advantage, and I would just use variables to my advantage. It didn't matter if it was like just using borrowed equipment all the time or whatever, and just going with what was going on that moment.
I remember that, dude. Oh God, I remember figuring out that you were doing that emo in college.
Yeah,
and that blew my mind. I remember it, man. It was like I you would like go into a fucking. I remember once you were in a stairwell. Because you liked the acoustics of the stairwell, the way it sounded in there. And like, you would have, like, a handheld tape recorder and just pick up people talking throughout the day and then sort of weave that in to your music. It was fucking cool, man. It's such a beautiful way of doing things. And I don't know why people are so terrified of that. It reminds me of that line in your song. God, I wish I could remember the names of your songs. I only know the lyrics. But it's like, fuck, it goes... If I ever wanted to do something, especially some horrible deed, how does it go? Emo, will you say it?
I think inadvertently that is pretty much, isn't that a, it's not a quote, but isn't that pretty much straight out of Crime and Punishment?
Maybe the Stranger or something. It goes, if I ever wanted to do something, especially some horrible deed, I wouldn't want to, what is it? I wouldn't want to what?
Do it for any particular reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do it, but I would want to think that something greater was working through me.
Yeah, right.
Ah, yeah. God, I wish I was that smart in college.
Well, you know, the one thing I'd say about that is at the time, you know, I was young enough to be like obsessed with my heroes, so I thought, you know, I was still thinking in terms of like pursuing the atmospheres that I'd heard on records before, even though, you know, it's a fascinating thing, that point at which you're following a leader. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a monk in the woods or what, but like you're following a leader, and then at one point you go so far and so deep into the philosophy that you break away off into this direction that you'd never seen mapped before, and you become so obsessed with this ritual of discovery that you start not caring about your own safety anymore. You just want to know what's going to happen, and it's a fascinating thing, because that's when the kind of a child becomes an adult, in a sense, that you transcend everything that led you to this point, and you release the whatever training wheels or parachute or whatever, and you're completely in this chaotic place, but you have this faith that like you're going in this right direction. And so anyway, my point is that, you know, I was emulating a lot of people that had come before me that I was obsessed with, but I look back at it now, and of course when I listen to tapes, I experience a couple different reactions. One of them is total embarrassment and, oh my God, how did I not have any objectivity about this? How did I not know that I sounded like such an idiot or something? But sometimes when the right chord is hit, there's a picture of like a reality that a lot of people went through. And in a sense, that's like sort of the point of music, is in some ways a communion or an articulation that other people can come to and see themselves in. And in that moment, it makes me so happy when I hear it now, because I realize that all of it was for a good reason, you know, that I really was. You know, it wasn't just some, you know, you're horrified when you're doing anything, any craft, if you suspect that maybe this is just a narcissistic chamber and you're just like trying to jack yourself off or something. Yeah. But like, it just makes you feel so fucking good to know that there were these arrival points, you know, where you did glimpse something and you were able to express it, and thank God now I'm still alive and I can revisit these things and I can put them on a record now and derive some sort of satisfaction. Not that it's the most profound thing in the world, but in a sense, I was always haunted that I might be wasting my life, and now I can kind of take a deep breath, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's, and I think that idea of like, well, what is wasting your life? And I think a lot of people would say wasting your life would be dilly-dallying around instead of, you know, being stable and secure and safe. And, and that's an entire cult of people, you know, that's a cult and it's real and it exists. And then there's a whole other group of people who've realized that wasting your life would be spending your time trying to make yourself safe when there is no hope for safety in a universe where you are mortal and temporary and you're only here in the blink of an eye. And to spend all your time defending against the inevitable is a horrific, I would say, a horrific waste of time, when instead what you're talking about there, opening yourself up and just letting yourself be exactly what you are. And, you know, you can use all kinds of lofty words for it. You could call yourself a servant. In Buddhism, it's called the Bodhisattva. You know, you can call yourself a white blood cell. Whatever you want to call yourself, you could say you're some kind of like subjective universe tentacling into the shared dream of planet Earth that however many billions of other subjective universes are wandering around on this planet right now. I can't remember the exact number. But it's like all those, you're a universe, a subjective universe. You're a black hole that's catching sensations and forming ideas about them and memories. And then from out of that depth, and it's a quantum depth, so it's an infinite depth of self that we have. Somewhere at the quantum level in our brains, these ideas come out of infinity, and then they come out of our mouths, and then they come into this earth plane and are sucked into the subjective universes of anyone who comes in contact with whatever it is we're putting out there. And that's a wild thing to consider, especially when you think about the theory that the Big Bang itself is one universe bumping into another universe, or, you know, M theory, that it's like bubbles in a bathtub, and from time to time universes push into each other and one explodes into the other, and the Big Bang is that sort of expulsion of a black hole in some other universe. So in that same way, it's like when you tune into this infinity and it comes through you in the form of your art, and then it gets into other people's universes, then you're doing these mini subjective big bangs all over the fucking place. And you really are ultimately just following the exact same pattern that got us all here in the first place. And letting go to that is such a fucking rush, man. It's such a rush when you get to that place. And not letting go to it is like being ripped apart by horses. What? It's a kind of a no-brainer choice, if you ask me.
Oh, I totally agree. I think, you know, I think some people's brains are just not, I mean, this is not a, it sounds condescending. Some people's brains are just not built in a way that they, you know, that they want to plumb the depths of like human potentiality and make the Faustian trade. I always believed that everyone can be honest, though, and in honesty is a wealth of like of knowledge and truth, that if only people would be honest, that there's a true pure value in that. And I think that obviously, you know, it's not a very big cultural commodity, that kind of raw honesty I'm talking about. But then in addition, I mean, all those times that we would take acid, whether it was Monday night or Friday night and there was a party or there was nothing going on and the whole campus was asleep, and all those times that we took acid, which I would say was a couple hundred fucking times or something.
I was just wondering about that the other day. I was like sitting like just scratching my beard like God knows how many other aging hippies around the planet, and thinking, how many times did I take acid? It seems like so many times.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the all those times we did it, you know, we were coming from a place of this sort of ritual, sort of an ancient ritual of discovery, you know, that within those 8 hours or something, that something, I mean, we were sure something profound would be uncovered, you know, like it was never a party culture. And luckily, maybe we just weren't in that environment, but, you know, we would have been the same people either way. But one thing I did was, like, I don't know if you remember this, but I was selfish enough that I would always leave everybody and go be alone for like 2-3 hours. I can remember times you were knocking on that dungeon basement door, like, dude, are you done yet or whatever?
Oh yeah, it was infuriating because we take acid together, and you, the fucking artist, would go vanishing off and to record music while I would probably just, I don't know what I was doing. I would wander around and, I don't know, maybe chant Hare Krishna or something. But yeah, that was something like taking acid with you. It was like you're going to hang out for an hour as it's kicking in. And then you'll hang out for the last part of the trip.
Well, I'm kind of sorry for it, but then now listening to tapes, I'm not sorry.
I'm not sorry. I'm so glad you did that.
Well, you know, I don't know if you remember this, and I'm pretty sure it won't be embarrassing, but you know that song, I think I know you know it, on Decline of the West is the Evil Falling Down from the Sky song.
How does it go?
Well, it says that over and over, Evil Falling Down.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Well, you totally... You made that up, because I remember I was tripping. It's funny to me, like the past few weeks, especially as I go through these tapes, it's funny to me how much of an influence you had on me, because I I forget that, and now I am confronted with it because you're on the tapes. I just found another song that you're on.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So I'm glad I was taping this shit. But like, it's funny to me now realizing how much of an influence you were, because you tend to forget that stuff as the years go by. I mean, it wouldn't have been called Holy Sons if I hadn't met you. It wouldn't have been, you know what I mean? It wasn't
wild.
You know, it's really strange to think back on the seismic, like you've said before, when the orbits kind of get knocked out and stuff. And so anyway, so this time I was tripping in the studio that they had given me underneath the cafeteria, which was really bizarre because it was right next to all those mailboxes. So if I'd be like shrieking murderous stuff back there, and people, all these like freshman girls, I mean, that had never been outside of their parents', you know, house, were like checking their mail and just hearing searing, like, I mean, really satanic shit, you know. And of course, I didn't care. I just didn't care, especially when I was out of my depression and I was tripping in that phase. I was just like, you know, deal with it. I didn't fucking care. And so there was this one time specifically, although I'm sure there was a few, where you kind of came down and found me. And anytime you're tripping and somebody's like knocking on the door vigorously, that's a fucking scary thing, you know? It just totally yes. shakes you.
Yes.
And I remember I let you in, and it could have been that you hadn't dosed or something, but like I was in this zone, you know, and you came in and you were in kind of a certain kind of bad mood or upset or depressed. And so I think something was going on maybe with your girlfriend or something. And I remember it was one of the many times this happened, but I looked at you and I was just like, you were kind of just talking about something randomly. I just interrupted you. And I was like, what is wrong? And you were like, what do you mean? You know, 'cause you were kind of going about your day. But I looked deep in your eye in that way that happens when you're tripping, you know, and I was like, what is wrong or something? And, you know, you were like, oh, it like stopped you in your tracks. And you were like, well, I feel like the clouds are parting and God's hands are pointing down at me and going, "You are a terrible person." But, you know, I mean, it's like a breakthrough in therapy. It's like a breakthrough. It's like these moments where you just want someone to be honest. And in that moment, you know, if you can lure them to the attempt or the desire to be honest, that there's a breakthrough waiting to happen at any minute of any day.
Any minute.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. But
so you named that song because I just thought of, you know, it was years later. Just somehow the image was so beautiful to me of you, that you revealing that about your own emotional sort of field, you know, that because you really got down to it in that moment. You really to answer the question, what's wrong? I mean, you answered it. You answered a sort of a perennial question for yourself, a sense of
yes,
sort of eternal guilt.
Yeah, it's not being able to love myself, and that's the big problem. Is you there's two parts to the thing, man. The first part is identifying if you are not fond of yourself, because some people I don't think that that's something that they like to keep in the deep dark recesses of their subconscious mind. They just think life is rough, or they think people are dicks, but they don't realize that they're like not fond of themselves. So it's like the first thing is like, yeah, that's cool that I said that. And it makes me sad hearing that, because I think like, God damn it. You know, like you have to love yourself. Like, I wish that I hadn't been so hard on myself ever. But the second part is, you know, once you realize like, oh my God, I fucking hate myself. I feel so bad. I feel so guilty. I feel so whatever it is. That should be followed as much as you can with a compassion for yourself. You have to have compassion for yourself, because if you hate yourself, then that means you're identifying with a very limited, tiny little portion of what you actually are. And that thing that you're hating, the thing that you hate so much, is really not you at all anyway. It's just a temporary thing, you know, but you've got to love it as much as you can, or forgive it, or have compassion. It's the, you know, you can do it with like any douchebag, like some call to mind any douchebag in your life. Just summon them up in your mind and think about them like someone who really, you just really find to be absolutely awful. Somebody that you've been throwing on the dissection table with your friends and cutting to shreds whenever you possibly can. Find that person, and with a few deep breaths and very small, of tiny little bit of mental energy, you will realize that these people have felt just as lonely as you feel, just as sad as you feel, have experienced their own loss in the same way you felt loss. This is the stuff Jack Kornfield talks about, and it's developed. And what ends up happening is like, oh, fuck, man, that person's just acting like that because they're in terrible pain. And then it's like, you're going to fucking be a dick to them now? They're in pain. So in the same way, it's like you've got to do the same thing to yourself. Because that douchebag wandering around in your heart is actually just whatever part of you when you were a kid broke away and tried to escape from your unloving parents or your angry siblings or your alcoholic uncles or whatever. So that's crazy. You got to acknowledge it, but then you've got to do more than just acknowledge it, I think. Or you just got to surrender. You just have to love. God damn it, just fucking love yourself, idiots. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you know, you watch so many people. Well, you watch everyone all the time wrestling so deeply with the shadow. You know, going on these massive rants about someone. You know, and how they just don't get this or something. You know, and you think, God, with all that, you know, congested energy just needing to shift over into this other route where it could maybe give way to some massive revelation, you know?
Massive revelation. Revelation here on it's revelation like revelation on the level of like the apocalypse level revelation. If you can start playing around with this stuff. Because it's like I've been reading Man and His Symbols again by Jung, and he's talking about how in dream analysis, the difference between Jungian analysis and Freudian analysis is that in Jungian analysis, in Freudian analysis, they do free association. So somebody dreams about a flying hamburger that shits a wasp's egg on top of their wife's pussy or whatever. Then
typical.
One of those dreams. You do free association with that. Like, all right, well, when I say wasp's egg on your wife's pussy, what do you think? And so then they'll think, oh, I think about my grandmother showing me her asshole or whatever when I was 8. So, like, it's free association. Well, in Jungian analysis, Jung says that instead of doing free association, what he does is when somebody brings up a symbol, he just keeps bringing them back into the dream, back into the dream, back into the dream. And through the process of going back into the dream and really deeply analyzing the dream, then you can find whatever the thing is that the patient or the person's turning their back on within themselves. So I think it's interesting because I've been studying Buddhism heavily right now, and I think it's fascinating how Buddhism is doing the identical thing, only Jung has taken it one step into the shell of life, which is our dreams. And Buddhism is actually using the shell of life itself, which is the present moment. So in the way Carl Jung talks about bring your attention back to the dreams, Buddhism says bring your attention back to the present moment. And if you keep bringing your attention back to the present moment, then you will have the revelatory apocalyptic experience of recognizing that this is a dream. This that you're in right now is a dream. This is a dream. That's why when they ask the Buddha, you know, what are you? Are you a god? No. Are you an angel? No. Are you a magician? No. And he said, well, what are you? And he said, I'm awake. I woke up. That, I think he really meant, this is a dream. This is a dream condition we're in here, man. This is a dream. Not in the way of like, it's like a dream, but it is a dream. We're in some, this is, you know, right now they keep, simulation theory keeps popping up in the mainstream media where people are contemplating whether or not this is some kind of hologram or some kind of simulated thing that we're experiencing. And that's something they've been saying for thousands of years, but in the same way that religion uses the most high-tech symbols of its time to articulate transcendent ideas, we're using the most high-tech symbols that we have, which is, you know, videos, computers. So we're using that to try to say this is an illusion. But that's the rush I'm talking about, man. To bring it back to the beginning, that's that fucking thing where it's like, yeah, sure, you're going down the hill. You've done this or you've done that. You've accomplished this or you haven't accomplished that. That's all the world. There's a deeper, deeper, deeper fucking thing that's real, you know, more real than what you think is real. And that is to me, like, that is such an exciting fucking idea. That is exciting. Because I love having, have you ever had a dream where you realize you're in a dream?
I can't remember.
Oh, God, man, that's the best. I've had them. You wait, suddenly you're like, oh, my God, I'm in a dream. You realize it. You're like, wow, this is a dream. I'm in a fucking dream. And then, I've flown in dreams having that kind of lucid moment where like, oh, fuck, man, I think I can fly. And then somehow you fly. And then like, oh, you know, your mind will suddenly start shaping its environment in all these weird ways. And then you wake up like, what the fuck was that? That was crazy. Well, I think in the same way in this existence, you can have that identical experience. And I think that whether or not that means you can fly or walk through walls or do all those things, who the fuck knows? I'd say probably not. I've never seen anyone do it, but I know people who say they have. I know people that I trust who say they've watched monks walk through walls. like I don't know if that's real. It seems like total cockamamie crap, if you ask me. But on the other hand, these people have told me shit that is like philosophically altered my life permanently, so I don't know why I have to like not believe that they've seen someone walk through a wall or seen someone bring a bird back to life that had died. You know, like who, like I don't know, but I think that there is the potential, aside from all that, you know, magical weirdness aside, there is the potential to wake up for real. And that's, I think, what is the terrible term that's been used so many times that they call enlightenment. Praise God. Praise God.
Well, that seemed to be the Jungian, you know, individuation goal was that, you know, maybe underneath the surface you may have a divine, this is just like free will like thoughts, but you may have a divine purpose, you know, that like isn't necessarily accomplishing one specific thing or anything, but that there's a flow reserved only for you that you need to like, you know, accelerate the pedal into the curves of the mountain of your life, you know, and you need to seize yourself, you know, and posit the unconscious contents into the conscious, you know, and that for you, you know, you are a unique individual, and that ignoring that in itself is a disservice, you know, to you and everybody else. But that was part of that thing, you know, the times in my life where people don't seem to have any curiosity. I think I found that the most curious, you know, like if I was going to my room to go be alone and while we're tripping or something, you know, the other people that were just sort of like, you really got the sense that just kind of going and sitting in the middle of a bunch of other college kids, you know, pounding beers and just like the surface experiences alone were enough or something.
Well, you want a mate. I mean, don't forget that. Like, not everybody's like the fucking genius artist going off to record amazing music. A lot of us are just fixated on wanting on girls. You know, like, that's a huge, huge anchor on the attention of a lot of men and women in humanity, man. It's like...
But it's only a simulation of the affirmation they are wanting to give themselves, and,
yes,
and that more unique self that is dormant, you know, at the time. It just seems weird when it's spooky, even especially when you're tripping, when you're meeting people that just aren't in touch with the curiosity to begin that process. It's always spooked me out. It's really confused me, and I, in general, mainstream people almost frighten me, like they would when you're tripping. You know, you're just like, who are you? What are you? Are you an animal? Are you an alien? What? How do you get by? How does your brain chemistry fire neurons and you not investigate how you even came into this existence? Like, it's something that has always confused me as I've seen people experience what appears to be genuine happiness without hard-won truths, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's just a way that people are. I've thought of lots of different ways of thinking about it. And then what I like to think about is like, oh my God, I wonder who I seem like that around. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I think what happens is you begin to expand and open up more, and the more compassion you have for yourself, the more compassion you develop for the people around you. So when you run into like one of these walking dead, sleepwalking, completely brainwashed humans, and you can identify them very quickly just by asking them like, you know, any kind of conversation, you'll find that they just seem to, they all say the same kind of exact things. You know, they all believe the same things in varying degrees. They all have weirdly the same aspirations. They all have this pseudo morality that the moment, like, a gun was placed against their heads would, you know, they'd piss it right out their fucking pants. You know, like, they're all like sort of cobbled together robots running an operating system written for them by a weird unification of corporations and a government. And so it's like you run into that from time to time. And this is what I really am getting off on about, like, studying the Buddhism and studying, reading Ram Dass and really thinking about it and then testing this stuff out. The only answer here is to love yourself. And if you love yourself and work on yourself, then suddenly those, what you will see when you come in contact with somebody who, as you were saying, is surprisingly happy or somehow like, but I've noticed that happiness you're talking about has a strange kind of poisonous edge to it, and that the happiness will shift to paranoia the moment you act slightly outside the norm of what they're used to encountering. But the idea is you just love them. Give them your attention and love them. Listen to them. Sure, are they talking about like something that seems exactly like the same thing you've heard a million times? Whatever it is that you're being judgmental of, you know, you just listen and give them your attention and just listen. I think if there's any hope for the world, if there's any hope for waking up the world, if there's any hope for cutting through the conditioning, I don't know how much, you know, violent revolution or setting up tents and throwing Molotov cocktails at people is going to work. I think that might work. I know it's worked in the past for sure with other countries, but then the end result is generally the repetition or of the thing that the revolution was about over time. But it's like, I know that if like suddenly you start figuring out ways to connect on a deeper level with every single person around you, and you do it as a form of spirituality, a practice, and you try to do it not in a hippy-dippy, crystal-wearing, oh, you're wonderful, no matter passive-aggressive way. You actually have to do it. Like, try falling in love with somebody that you are passing on the street, or that's a cashier who's giving you change for the bagel you bought. See inside of them if you can. If you're in love, if you're lucky enough to be in love with somebody, imagine that's who you're getting change from. Only they've gotten amnesia. And you know that it's this person you're in love with, but they don't know it. So they're acting in a completely different way. There's a lot of different tricks you can use to try to develop this thing called compassion or loving kindness. And it's like, God damn it, man. If you pull it off and you can do it, and you don't do it because you're like, I'm going to change you. You do it because you realize that this person is suffering just like you're suffering. You do it as a kind of weird, natural flow of the healing force of the universe. It sounds so pompous and puffed up and fucking awful. Like, this person, the way I'm describing, I would never want to give this person change. But if you can do it in a real, authentic way, God, man, that feeling for me whenever I get to be around love, when someone looks at me and just loves me, even if it's my dog, it's like being in the summer and finding a fan. You know, or a better way to put it is being in the fucking cold-ass winter of the Western world. And the moment you find someone who loves you, you get this subjective, just rush of warm embrace. And within that little bubble, man, that's where you start healing, right there. That's where you start, like, growing and having the big ideas. You know? So, yeah, I know those fucking brainwashed people, and I used to fucking hate them, and I used to try to push their buttons. I'd get around them and try to, like, you know, say exactly the wrong thing, you know, just out of a form of stupid rebellion. Like, my aunt, me and my dad went to visit my aunt, and God knows what she said, man. But she's like a 78-year-old Southern woman with cancer. And she said something, I don't know what, man. I'm sure it was something about the army or the military. And I kind of loudly, in just this oily shithead way, was like, I can't believe anybody'd fight in that war. Like, I didn't need to see. What am I thinking I'm going to do, man? Am I going to change? Is my goal to, like, turn a 78-year-old woman a woman who's been on the planet for 78 fucking years? Is my goal to suddenly, like, make her say war is bad? It's just so stupid.
I just remembered when we took existentialism class together, and there was, like, these two parts. I'm sure there was many tense times, but there was, like, these two points where I remember. It was fucking hilarious. It was awesome. There was, like, everybody's kind of, you know how, like, especially in an existentialist or Buddhist class in college, like, there's going to be a lot of smart asses just sort of, like, repeating some diatribe they read in a book that day as though they, like, completely get it. And, like, the teacher's like, oh, very good, you know, or whatever. And, but you were kind of the opposite. I remember you were going through a lot of, like, shit at the time, and you were kind of horrified, like, a lot of the time with, like, the basic, how simple things were being summed up. And I remember there was a couple times where you stopped the class in horror, just like, wait. So you're telling me I'm falling from a building, and all I need to do is just realize I'm falling from a building or something. It was hilarious. There was another one where you were like, okay, there's a rock in my shoe and it's driving me crazy. And you guys are telling me to keep the rock in my shoe? I could just take it out. it's all sort of nowhere, you know, these, like, kind of, like, frivolous attempts to sum it up in some, like...
No, man, I was getting some big solar plexus punches from you in those classes. Like, it's not comfortable when you hear these things at first. Like, if you've managed to inoculate yourself so that you haven't really just gotten down to the fucking truth, that you are plunging into oblivion. Like, if you've managed to, like, really keep that at a nice, safe distance, and then you start hearing things, this thing described in ways that are unavoidable, you can't. The problem is, it's sort of like it's almost like tricking yourself into thinking fire isn't hot. Like, somehow your entire life you haven't been around a flame or something, and you've convinced yourself that it's a safe thing. And then you get around someone's like, no, this shit sets you on fire. It'll kill you. Look, you can't argue. Touch it. It's fucking hot. In the same way, like, when truth is articulated in the way that it can be in existentialist philosophy, as well as in Buddhism and in any kind of, like, great truth, tradition of truth, it starts, you know, it's gonna shake up the snow globe. You know what I mean? It's gonna, like... It's like you have to deal with it. People hate it, man. I got off stage once. I remember getting off stage once, and I'd been talking about having cancer, and this old comic, this classic comic, came up to me. He's like, are you going to really just talk about cancer on stage? He's like, don't you understand that people come here to try to escape life? And I was sick. I think I was getting radiation at the time, and I didn't have the energy to argue with him. But I've thought about that for a long time ever since. You know, like, man, really? Like, oh, so that's my job? Like, you're saying the job of the comedian is to keep people in the dark about what life is? Just make them laugh, kind of, like, trick them. Keep them distracted from the Grim Reaper that's standing right behind them with a knife-dripping poison. You know what I mean? Like, why? It's funner. It's more fun to point in the direction of that fucking great goddamn vortex of nothingness that we're all being evaporated into at this very moment. That's fun. Like, that's what you should be pointing at. Like, if I'm at a kid's party, I'm not going to point to the clown. I'm going to point to the 7 million armed goddess creature that's slicing and severing the heads off of everyone's mommy and daddy and has been doing it since the beginning of time. Really? Like, why shouldn't we look at that thing? Let's turn and take a look at that thing. Because the more you look at that thing, the more you realize that that thing that seems so terrifying and awful is just the rocket ship that blasts us into the next phase of what we really are.
It's funny that, I mean, it's funny that you said that guy was a classic comic. I mean, it implying that he was pretty famous, because it seems obvious that no one will ever most likely think of him as important if that's really his, like, value.
Well, it depends. They might, you know, because it's like there seems to be a group of people on the planet who want to have this endless lullaby sung to them.
Sure, sure.
And they
sure.
want this lullaby sung to them until they're laying in a hospital bed and they're too high on morphine to hear it anymore. And then they just blink out. So that lullaby comes in the form of, you know, the mainstream, generally mainstream anything that keeps you.
And that's a service, and you can do that well. It's true. I guess by saying important, I meant like something that transcends that service. But yeah, you're
well, no, is that a service, or is that like just kind of like an incredibly, it's like, you know, is it a, like the person who, like, what do you want? You want, when you're in hell, do you want somebody to come piddling around just like convincing you that you're not, or making you feel like you're not? Or wouldn't it be better for someone to be like, look, here's the reality of where you are? I don't know. It just depends on what you feel like talking about. And some comedians, they don't want to talk about any of this shit, and they don't think it's meant to be talked about, that you're not supposed to talk about on stage. But yeah, no, I don't know. I still feel a little like, I don't know. I'm still confused by him telling me that. Like, I always refer back. My brain is still processing that idea, because it's just like, oh, well, if you're saying, well, anytime you hear anyone tell you what music is, let me tell you what rock and roll is, Emil. You know, whatever's following that is going to be sure. a turd.
Yeah, I know. They're just setting up a taboo to be broken, for sure.
Let me tell you. You know, I'm going to tell you what comedy's all about.
That would be a killer, like, practical joke, though, is every time that guy wanders into one of your sets, you just flip back to cancer immediately. And just, you
know. He was just scared of death. You know, that's the problem. This fucking fear of death, man. It's like, it really does, you know, it's scary. And it does turn people into, like, it's a problem for people, you know. It's just got so many levels to it, you know. There's so many levels to it, and the very top level is you being angry because somebody cut you off in traffic, and then it gets deeper and deeper, and you start finding these deeper and deeper levels of terror that you have to go through, and then somewhere underneath all that terror is where you get to the other side, perhaps.
Well, every brand of expression can be done well and can be done horribly. So maybe, you know, maybe he did. I'm sure there's an aspect of truth to what he was saying. I was when I was listening to a tape of myself in 95 the other day, I was in a bar, and, you know, it's just the noise of the bar in Chapel Hill was like really loud, and you could hear people having a good time. And then you could hear me on the mic, and I was, you know, not having a good time, and I was uncomfortable. And it's not that I necessarily didn't want to be there, but I was expressing my daily reality, which was thoroughly depressing. And so I remember driving along and listening to it and thinking, as a man of an age that might be kind of like the older dude watching you do that set, you know, and thinking like, wow, this kid really doesn't even, he's not even aware of his surroundings or his potential market or whatever, you know, because these people, like, they couldn't absorb where I was coming from. They just couldn't. It was not even, there was no way. Maybe if there were a hushed Sebado crowd in 1989, you know, maybe they would have been like, oh, what's going on inside this person? But they weren't like that, and yet I was forcing myself onto them.
Well,
so,
you know, everything I do is for the people.
But anyway, so
you know what I mean? That's the whole idea. That's the camp that guy's on. What are you? Everything you do is for the people, huh, man? That's what you're saying. You're saying that anything that anybody creates, they should do it with the fucking audience in mind.
Well, I think that I think that guy, yeah, probably is of the mainstream world where you look at the numbers first, you see how something has worked before, you see that it's tested, and then you bring it back to that same market, and that's his business, you know. But maybe in addition to that, maybe there's a reality where of an entertainer or something where you realize what vibration, especially if you're a DJ, what kind of vibration is out there in the room? Because if you fight against that vibration as a DJ, it's very awkward. I mean, you're definitely not really doing your job unless...
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a terrible... I don't like that kind of comic, personally. I don't like the kind of comic that's just trying to shock the audience. The types of comedians I like have figured out a way to honestly be themselves on stage and articulate their life experiences in a really hilarious way that makes me laugh. And in the most exciting moments are the ones that make the universe seem much more fascinating and deeper and complex, even if it's in a scary way, like what George Carlin would do. It's still like, wow, fuck, this is a wow. I didn't realize. Yeah. Oh shit. Like whatever the thing is they're saying. Like, you know, when Carlin rips apart the Ten Commandments in a way that, you know, it, when he was doing it, I think was a bit more intense than it is now. But still, that vivisection of subjective physics, you know, where you're just like, oh, really? You thought the law of gravity was real? Look, I'm slicing it in half. You know, and usually subjectively that, you know, that can't happen in the real world, but that can definitely happen if you're somebody who's managed to trick themselves into thinking you don't exist in like an empire. And somebody successfully articulates to you, like, wakes you up to the fact, like, oh, no, you're probably, like, just as brainwashed as the people in North Korea. Maybe just as brainwashed as the North Koreans that you watch on Vice magazine and seem so insane. You might be just as brainwashed. And if you can get that across in a way where it, like, makes people realize, like, shit, 90% of the ideas in my head were laid there by the corporate mantis who stuck its fucking alien H.R. Giger tube into my brain via rectangle, a pulsating light rectangle that I keep in my living room, and that most of the stuff that I think I didn't creatively come up with on my own. It's just a web of conditioned ideas that I wear as a kind of suit. Anyway, man, that kind of shit where it's like you like it push it. That's what I like about comedy. I've never once gone to a fucking comedy club thinking I gotta escape my problems, oh boy, with some good old laughs. I'm gonna go to the comedy club tonight and really just run away from my problems. Just a couple of minutes of forgetting about that cruel old world out there. Please.
No. Yeah, there's definitely something to be said for someone that's so experienced that they get on the stage and they mesmerize you with their ability to pull the whole audience into their orbit. I mean, it's a very subtle thing. It looks easy. You know, people look at it all the time. And I mean, comedy especially looks easy, but like to be a Dave Chappelle or somebody who that like you're just in his world immediately, you know?
Yes, exactly.
It takes so much experience.
Or a Louis C.K.
Yeah. It takes a lot of failure, and that's all I was talking about was listening to this kid not even understand, you know, like, you know, how to get his point across and when to do it, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, definitely, you want to like, yeah, you yourself now is like you're like the. It's like I guess it's like the flower looking at the, you know, folded up, you know, version of itself, you know, or the, you know, who knows, like you're just seeing this unfolding thing, and the difference between you and a flower, my sweet friend, is that you will not stop unfolding. And I think when in the beginning, maybe one way we might disagree, or even I may have misheard you, is what you're saying gives the impression that you've fully, you know, blossomed into the world, and this downhill uphill thing creates this like a pretty tragic continuum in a certain way, right?
It's more like your flower analogy. It's more like an old haggard samurai looking at like a 10-year-old boy and just sighing and being like, wow, it's over. Like, I'm here. It's not a sad thing. There's elements of sadness in it, but yeah, it's just part of life. There's a beauty to it for sure. And I'm not like rejecting it or anything like that. I'm just kind of reporting in.
Yeah, I get it.
This moment for sure. But I
like to think about, like, man, when we went out to when I went to that meditation retreat that I endlessly talk about to the point where some of my friends, I think, want to punch me in the face whenever I bring it up. When, like, at the very end of this retreat, man, it's so crazy. In the morning, at the last day, you go out onto the beach, right? And Ram Dass is there in a wheelchair. This is the ocean, man. He's had a stroke. The one side of his body is paralyzed, right? He doesn't care. They push him into the ocean in his wheelchair. And he goes floating off into the ocean with the people at the retreat and is like throwing a tennis ball with him. And like, man, it, you know, like he like is so happy. This is like a, you know, I don't know how old he is, man, but he's old and he's had a stroke and he's floating in the fucking ocean. And like at one point he's like swimming and I was watching him and he's swimming and he flips over on his stomach with his head in the water, right? Like he's drowned. Like he's, Ram Dass is now floating face down in the ocean. The guy at the meditation retreat that you went to, you've been reading about. And he's floating face down in the water and everybody's floating around him. And nobody wants to do anything because we all want to think he's okay. And I'm watching him thinking like, all right, man, I'm going to, you know what? I think I'm going to count to 30. And if he's not turning over, I'm going to help because how the fuck do we know what's happening? And like, it gets to this really intense moment. Like, Jesus Christ, I don't think I could hold my breath that long. He flips back over and his eyes are like crazy. And he's like, ah. Like a monster or something. It's so hilarious. And it's such a very funny way of like, not just, you know, pointing inside of everyone's fear and like showing, look where you're still hung up. Look where you don't trust. Look where you're afraid. It's also showing like, do you think anyone goes away forever? Do you think when things are outside of what you can see outside of you, which is under the water, that they're gone forever? No, everything always comes back. And it was a beautiful way to end the fucking retreat. And so what I mean is, haggard as you may be, I think there is in every single moment the potential for that haggard shell to break away and for there to be a brand new fucking thing.
I totally agree. And I still experience it all the time when there's a kind of like thing where you're working so hard on a lot of things, and then every few weeks or every couple months there's like a day where everything gets zipped up to fruition and you stand back for a second, and it's not that you're like taking in the beauty of what you've done, but you feel the true payoff for usually for like a half a day or something of like all of the tiny microscopic worlds you've just immersed yourself into. You pull up into a God's eye view and you're like, fuck yeah. There definitely are still those moments for sure. Yeah. I'm not trying to say that they're not. And you're saying everything you're saying is true. You cycle right back into sort of the same high of transformation, of becoming, you know, a butterfly or whatever in that moment you as you're becoming the thing that you're destined to be, you still get that same high for sure.
There might
be an outer region of a field that you exist in around that feels aged and feels like not as naive and stuff, but yeah, you cycle back for sure.
You cycle back and then you cycle right back into the age thing again. It's that's the pendulum of it, man. It's just like, I guess that for me, whenever I get into that dark place, I always have to remind myself this won't last. And whenever I'm in that other place where like, holy shit, I'm reborn. No, not gonna last. Oh man, thanks, Emil. Thanks for doing this. This is great. Thank you.
Yeah, totally. I it was one of those days where you called me and I wasn't mentally prepared, and then we just plunged into maybe a little bit more therapy for me or something this time, and it just it does actually feel really good to Yeah, to kind of hear the words out loud and then acknowledge that they're all just sort of states of mind and words, and they dissolve and you go to a new state of mind, you know.
Yeah, man, it's the best thing and the worst thing about everything. Dude, before you go, can you have this album with Altar in the Woods? Is there a website people can go to get that, or can you tell me what the album is?
Yeah, well, I'll send you the link, but there's only one way to get it. As I get older and sort of veer more towards like the new model of how to sell records, it's pretty simple. It's like a good way for me to do it is just to use avant-garde labels and smaller labels, and the money comes more directly to me instead of like some label with people, a huge staff, and I don't even know them or anything. So there's only one place to get it, and it's at this label called Chrome Peeler that's in upstate New York, and he's got a website where he's doing a pre-order right now. Altar in the Woods is on it, and then another song called Young Man that I'm about to do some sort of premiere so people can hear it, but it's me and you tripping in the dorm room, and we're kind of crying, but we're kind of laughing, and it's a pretty awesome. There's only one recording in my entire collection like it, and there's something very special about it. Yeah, so anyway, that's on it too, and hopefully I can play that soon. But yeah, I'll put the link up, and yeah, you go to Chrome Peeler, and he'll have the pre-order link up now.
Thank you, Emil. I'll have all the links at the website. Follow Emil on Twitter. What's your Twitter?
I think it's just Emil Amos.
Isn't there? Anyway, all the links will be at DougAtRussell.com. Thanks, Emil.
Yeah.
Bye. Hold on. That was Emil Amos. If you like this podcast, give us a nice rating on iTunes. This is the track Evil Falls from Emil's album Decline of the West, available on Amazon and iTunes.
Evil falling down from the sky. Clouds parting, fingers pointing down again. Evil falling down from the sky. Clouds pointing, fingers parting down. I don't wanna go back to tamer time. Stop me if you see me pacify.
Thank you. mean, you know,